Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. A Netflix original documentary. A Vice documentary production. Jim Carrey, sporting a bushy beard, sits for an interview, sipping from a mug as he waits patiently for a film crew to set up.
Where is this?
Right there, you're good.
All right, so Jim.
Yes?
How would you start this movie?
Caption. In 1996, Jim Carrey allowed a video crew to document his performance as the late comedian Andy Kaufman in the film Man on the Moon.
Well, if I had my choice, it wouldn't start at all. It would already have been. And it wouldn't end either.
He smiles.
You know, I guess that's probably a good way to look at it. You know, when did this movie start?
The footage has been stored at Carrey's offices unseen for nearly 20 years. Now the footage plays, showing Carrey arriving at the film studio. He enters the busy film set, meeting the cast and crew, including Danny DeVito.
The first inkling that the family was interested in me doing the story of Andy was that I got his congas. And there's even blood on one of them, and a little bit of DNA left behind. By the master.
Welcome, he's the George best.
Here.
This
George
guy's
is here.
The best. He's the
you
guy.
You just so positive.
The
then I heard that Milos Forman wasn't interested in me for the part. And it had been a long time since I auditioned for anything. And I kind of had to put the ego in the back seat and say, I'm driving for a minute here. And so I put a little audition tape together of my own.
Actual audition footage of Carrey as Kaufman in a suit and turtleneck as he plays a record, then lip syncs to the chorus.
You don't know you can do it until you do it. So it was absolutely me auditioning for myself as well.
Here I come to save the day.
When I got it done and all together, I went, yeah, I can do this thing. I can do this thing.
Title, Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond, featuring a very special contractually obligated mention of Tony Clifton. Now various clips of Carrey and the real Kaufman as credits roll.
The part of Andy Kaufman went to comic actor Jim Carrey.
News, Jim Carrey, one of the most popular actors and
most watched and well-paid actors of our time.
Initially, when I heard I had the part, I was sitting in Malibu looking at the ocean and thinking, where would Andy be? What would he be doing?
Andy Kaufman cared less about making his audience laugh than keeping them confused. WrestleMania!
I bet he would be doing something like trying to communicate telepathically.
Edited by Barry Polterman.
And maybe I went too far, I don't know. That's what most people are telling me.
Immediately, like 30 dolphins came to the surface.
Executive producers Michael Cornish, Jim Sarnecki, and Nicole Montez.
So I thought, well, maybe I'm on the right track. So I decided from then, for the next few days, to speak telepathically to people.
Executive producers Eddie Moretti, Shane Smith, and Tony Clifton.
It was absurd. It was completely absurd. But somehow it worked.
But you're a...
That's the moment when Andy Kaufman showed up, tapped me on the shoulder and said, sit down, I'll be doing my movie.
Carrey as Kaufman, smiling wide-eyed.
What happened afterwards was out of my control.
Produced by Danny Gabay, Brendan Fitzgerald, and Spike Jones. Directed by Chris Smith. On set, Forman directs Carrey as Kaufman with co-star Paul Giamatti.
We are doing another Andy over you. You start now when Andy steps in, you know?
I step in.
You know what you're playing, so.
Okay.
It's really weird.
It's totally surreal.
It's really bizarre.
Thank you very much.
As Latka from Taxi.
I don't like it.
Okay.
I want to do one more.
Danny DeVito.
So bizarre.
It's really great. He's exactly the way Andy was. Exactly.
Well, we left the show, and I said, George, I said, this guy is the worst comic I've ever seen in my life. He says, isn't it great? And I said, no, George, he's the worst comic I've ever seen.
It was George really, has been drinking too much.
It was really
too
I fun. Tried to explain. He's trying to bomb. Don't you understand? He's doing the bombing.
How do you explain that? How do you explain Kaufman before
well,
you've
never seen him?
Aboudé.
Let's say he's here, right now, looking down, and he sees this guy playing him that well.
Judd Hirsch.
Creepy. Imagine you came back and you saw somebody playing you.
Carol Kane.
But on the other hand, it might be nice to have been remembered.
Yeah, but I didn't know him.
Hirsch again.
I was practically like all other people.
Well, basically where that box is.
I remember watching Andy on the Dick Van Dyke specials and the Carson show doing the Foreign Man.
Footage of Kaufman performing on the Dinah Shore Show as the other guests watch with frowns, including Bob Hope and Sammy Davis Jr.
Where would have you been?
Oh, I was in Canada. I wasn't even a comedian yet. I was a comedian in my house. But, yeah, that was before I had even started. And it blew my mind.
Andy Kaufman.
I went, wow, this is different. This doesn't care what everything else is.
Another variety show. He wears a cowboy hat, lip syncing to a record.
Oh, I like that song, Mr. Billy. Let's all sing it, shall we?
All right, little Tex, are you ready, boys? Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O.
Andy broke through the so-called importance of the medium of television. Everybody was on their best behavior. They had their best stuff, man. Ed Sullivan, there were people like spinning plates and stuff like that. And they had, you know, routines they had come up with and perfected over 1,000 years. And here comes Andy lip syncing to a record. You know, Mighty Mouse is wonderful. The reading the whole of Great Gatsby, unbelievable idea.
Chapter 1.
He reads the novel wearing a tuxedo.
In my younger and more vulnerable years.
Basically, the Foreign Man was his plea to his father to love me, accept me. And he even wore his father's sports jacket.
I would like to do for you some imitations. So first...
You know, because... His dad obviously loved him, but he was an insurance guy, and he kind of expected the all-American kid, and what he got was some kind of effeminate, kooky, creative, insane person who liked to spend all his time in his room doing shows to the wall.
I thought Duty-Ville was inside of the television, you know? Like, the television was this box, and if I went inside
his
the box...
genuine sweetness, childlike quality... His love for songs like Rose Marie and Slim Whitman being his favorite singer.
I love you. He plays the guitar shirtless with a turban and fake mustache.
Let's hear your best ending for this sentence. I'll do anything for you except...
On the Dating Game.
Except what?
Kaufman is one of the contestants.
He didn't belong to the club. Any club. And he was the one, while everybody else was playing sports, he was talking to the trees. But it was about pulling those people over. It was about, I've got something in my hands and it's really magical, but you can't see it because I have special powers. You know, it was that need to be special.
Lack it, no, this is very important phone call.
I don't think there was anybody better to do it than me.
Yes?
I know what it's like to do shows in my room to the wall and rehearse for the company. And every time somebody comes over to be putting on a show, and the one that's a little different.
Carrie on set.
Do you feel like talking to the people that were closest to him sort of like helped?
Absolutely, it helped, but that's their version of him. That's the way they want him to be seen. And you have to kind of take all of that in and then make your own assumptions and your own calls and your own go with your own instinct.
Carrie sings to himself on the studio lot, cradling a Howdy Doody doll.
I know that guy. I know him as well as I can know him. But who do you know? Even when they're right in front of you.
He stares blankly at the interview camera. Caption, The Oprah Winfrey Show, February 17th, 1997. Carrie joins Oprah on her set, hugging her as the audience claps and cheers for him.
You know, I mean, I'm the guy who wrote the $10 million check to himself and had it come to fruition. And the guy who had the substitute teacher in grade two who said that, you know, whenever I want something, I pray to the Virgin Mary and I ask her for it and I promise something in return and I get whatever I want.
So didn't you write yourself a check? I heard that you did. Is that true?
I wrote myself a check for $10 million for acting services rendered, and I gave myself 5 years.
My dad could never afford a bicycle, so I went, okay. And I went home and I prayed for a bicycle and promised I'd say the rosary in return, and then I got a bicycle. Showed up in my living room. Brand new Mustang bike. I put it in one of the scenes in Eternal Sunshine. A Mustang bike with a banana seat.
Just before Thanksgiving 1995, I found out that I was going to make $10 million.
So you visualized...
From then on, it was whenever I wanted something to happen, I manifested it. I stood there in an open field like this with my arms out going, I'm ready, come on.
On set, Carrie finishes a take as Latka.
Get! That's enough, perfect! Thank you very much! Thank you very much!
It's finding out you have something special that you know how to do, and it gets a reaction. And it was like my dad. My dad was really funny, so I tried to be funny, and I was funny too. Holy moly, this is great. And that's how I got attention and love and made people think I was special.
Jim Carrey from Aldershot High School.
I started out imitating people.
My name is Jimmy Kill.
Stand-up footage.
And I was going to be the man of a thousand faces because the only person that I had ever seen that had made it from Canada was Rich Little, so I thought that was the way you did it.
Lay down. Pick the berries.
Henry Fonda. And, you know, people like that. I could do anybody physically really well.
James Dean.
And then at a certain point, I decided I would be training with weights on. I'm not going to have jokes. I'm just gonna get up on stage and sweat in front of the audience until something happens.
Feel really good tonight. Really good. Excellent. I just wanna go.
So I was just making sound. I was just doing things that were weird. And then I'd go home and I'd lay on my bed and I'd think, what do they want? What do they want? What do they want? What do they want?
Okay, so let's practice.
It wasn't what I wanted. I knew what I wanted. I wanted to be successful. I wanted to be a famous actor. But what do they want? What do they want? What do they want? What do they want? And then one day in the middle of the night, I woke up out of a sound sleep, like sat up in bed and went, they want to be free from concern.
He warms up the studio audience on the taxi set.
And the light bulb went off. And the very next night, I went to the Comedy Store. And the first thing I did was say,
good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And how are you this evening? All righty then. Like that. And it killed, slaughtered. Suddenly they just roared because they knew I didn't care. What I had decided in that moment in my bed was they need to be free from concern, so I'm gonna be the guy that's free from concern. I'm gonna appear to be the guy that's free from concern.
Clips of Carrie from his other movies.
It's as if I went into a fugue state and Hyde showed up.
When I put that mask on, I can do anything. Be anything.
A scene from The Mask.
I have a Hyde inside me that shows up when there are people watching. You know, when there's 1,000 people with their eyes on me and they hand me a microphone, Jim goes away and Hyde comes out. You know, but it's a good Hyde. It's not a hateful Hyde. It's a loving Hyde that just wants everybody to party and have a good time, you know? But it's a Hyde nonetheless. And I feel like sometimes afterwards, like, damn, I lost control again. To him.
He mingles with the crew.
Good night, Andy.
Thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure doing a film.
Hey, you mean Andy.
Andy.
That's right.
Okay.
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 Okay, I'll tell Jim you like him, though.
Okay.
Okay, man.
You do that.
All right, thanks.
All right, man.
Yeah, which means I gotta get up at 5:20 fucking 5.
So we can leave at 6:00.
Fucking shit. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. So that I can come here and go, hello, 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 hello. Oh, wait, I'm not coming here tomorrow. It's Tony. I get some rest. I got some rest coming. I got some R&R.
Now in wardrobe.
Okay, just leave it open.
worry about it. I don't give a damn. Understand?
No problem.
Kaufman on Merv Griffin.
Is Tony gonna show up tonight?
Tony?
Clifton.
I don't...
Shit. Well, that must be one of Tony's fans.
How do you know him?
Well, I know that Tony Clifton shows up once in a while where you're performing.
Yes, well, he's only on two occasions, really. You know. This is true. You can have him on your show and you'll tell me, see for yourself if you think it's me.
I assure you, you won't. I would love to have him on my show. Can you arrange it?
I can't arrange it, but you can find out who his agent is.
Kaufman's been using my name to get places.
Letterman.
And so there is no truth to the rumor that you're actually Andy Kaufman.
There's no truth to that rumor whatsoever.
Tony Clifton.
That's total fabrication on your part.
Well, no, I didn't. I mean, a lot of other people have said that.
Yeah, I know. Me and people are saying that. Many people say a lot of things.
On the studio lot, two men pull up in a vintage convertible muscle car, the driver wearing a paper bag mask. The car slams into the wall as he parks. Meanwhile, Foreman chats nearby with another man, frowning as they look on. Now the masked man stumbles drunkenly into the makeup trailer.
Good morning. I need some roses for all the beautiful girls in the world.
He carries a bouquet of roses. Later, one of the men sits at a makeup chair with a photo of a naked woman on the shelf in front of him, while his accomplice cranks up the volume on a boombox stereo, annoying the other actors in the trailer, including Judd Hirsch, who covers his ears. Neither man's face is shown clearly, but the man in the chair looks a lot like Carrie from the side profile, as the makeup artist applies a bushy wig, sideburns, mustache, and other facial appendages to transform him into Tony Clifton. Later, he emerges from the trailer as Clifton, swigging from a liquor bottle as Danny DeVito looks on with some other crew members, then makes his way to the film set in a pink tuxedo jacket.
The attitude was already there. And when you put that Tony Clifton makeup on, there's no choice. You're that guy. That nose, the jowls. And it's scary at first, and then after a while, you just go, oh, my God, this is incredibly liberating.
Tony.
Huh?
Tony, I want to introduce the head of the studio, Ron Meyer.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for the gift yesterday. Yeah, yeah. Very nice to meet you.
He struts around the set.
I do not like any comedy.
The great Academy Award-winning director of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest had to come to Tony and prostrate himself. To the great Tony Clifton. He had to come with his head down and say, Tony, I know that you know much better than I do what is right for the scene. But if you could just do one take where we try it this way, I would be so indebted to you for the rest of time.
Only then you start to say whatever you want.
Okay.
So that you know, you don't overlap.
All right, already.
You don't overlap.
Okay.
His first line.
Okay.
Okay, fine.
Right.
As a director, Jim Carrey is nowhere in sight. You're dealing with Tony Clifton.
Yeah.
Is that frustrating?
It is.
Foreman takes a break.
I need a director with backbone.
Back on set, Clifton flirts with two actresses.
I'm starting a little production company of my own.
Yeah?
Yeah. Action!
They do a take.
Taxi, waxy, just the backy, Maxie. Times all the words that rhyme with taxi.
Perfect. Okay.
He flirts with them again.
Waxy.
Take care of yourself.
Sound check.
Make sure you come back in, one piece.
Absolutely.
Or a two-piece. Two-piece would be nice, too. Huh? What do you mean? What's going on? What are they doing? Some kind of technical thing? Huh? What's going on?
He looks around at the crew.
What? Sound check. Sound check? I'll check the sound. It's working.
Later, Foreman eats at the caterer's truck, chatting with another man.
Good. We're going to have to deal with him.
He mellowed after lunch.
He was just kind of a pain body who needed to point it at something. And he did. And he did. And generally he pointed at the people that he felt were the loftiest, who thought they were better than him.
Clifton drives a golf cart through the lot.
What's that?
Oh, okay.
On the Universal lot, he stumbled into Amblin and busted through the doors and wanted to see Steven Spielberg.
I have this gentleman in the lobby that is looking for Steven Spielberg.
I would like to see the real shark. Your shark is a phony shark.
And wanted to assure him that his movies didn't have to be so crowd-pleasing.
I need Rachel.
What does Steven Spielberg
do? That's what I do.
What do you do?
I do a yak.
A yak?
That's right.
His shirt is open, exposing his belly.
Steven wasn't there, but he made quite a show of himself in the middle of the courtyard and had everybody out of their offices and looking at what the hell was going on.
In the cart again.
Trying to find his way into heaven.
Security waves at him.
Yeah.
Now a clip from the movie as Clifton performs with showgirls on a dinner club stage.
Oh, what a rhyme.
Footage of him acting out on set. He reviews dailies with the crew.
This is like a freaking evolution poster.
One shows him with Elton John.
He's a good man. I don't care what he wants to put in his mouth.
That's what I want. Just freak me out.
Can we talk a little bit about why someone would make a character that people hate?
That a lot of people didn't even find funny,
for the most part, or like what the reason?
It's funny on a certain level, on an anarchist level, it's funny.
Hey, look, there's Corey Feldman. It's Corey Feldman.
He shouts at a studio tour.
I think so much of this came from feeling disenfranchised. And it depends on how much you kind of resent that feeling of being an outsider.
Just sit over here.
Okay. And feeling like you're not accepted.
Yes.
Not only in society, but in some parts of your own family. And how you just want to get someone's attention. And I think that's that. It's like, how am I going to get your attention?
Andy. The whole crew watches dailies.
Get out of here. I've seen enough.
He leaves the small theater.
Take care of him. Push it.
He now heads out of the studio with his handlers, wandering down a hallway, then riding in an elevator.
Push it.
Push
it. Push more. You're
absolutely right. Yeah.
I think he's blowing it.
Here.
Right down.
The eyes got a little buggy.
Got a little buggy?
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Well, he wants to be liked. Jim Carrey wants to be liked. Was been liked by everybody.
He's
his worst enemy.
There's a scene where Tony is talking about Jim.
He's a coward.
And he's saying stuff like, you know, he wants to be liked by everyone. He's a coward.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I think at that time he was pretty accurate, actually. You know, but there's truth, and then there's truth with charity.
With DeVito.
I just wanted to tell him how much I enjoyed the shark.
Shark movie. That's
right.
Jaws.
That's right.
Yeah.
He never did better than that.
Now with Foreman.
Now, Jim, we are having Friday dinner.
Who and who?
You and me.
Who's you and me? I'm not going.
I know, but...
Milos called me about 2 weeks into shooting, and he said, I don't know what to do. I... have never dealt with anyone like Andy.
I'll check with him.
Check with him and let me know.
I'll let you know.
Okay,
I can't get him to call you.
Very good.
Okay.
Very good, very good.
Damn.
I'm so exhausted, you know. I'm so exhausted.
I understand. Yeah.
And Tony Clifton, I have never been intimidated by another man. And I am intimidated by Tony Clifton. And I said, well, we could fire them and I could do an impression. I'm a really good impressionist and I could do a pretty good imitation of both of them, I think. And then there was silence on the phone. And then Milos said, no, I don't want to stop it. I just wanted to talk to Jim.
At night, someone stumbles through the studio lot wearing the paper bag mask.
Harry. I'm
Batman.
On another day, Carrie returns as Kaufman, entertaining some extras as he dances and sings along with a piano player on the nightclub set, while the crew busily works around them. Later, he chats with another man.
Standing over there, I just came in. I really like have this feeling that someone else might be walking in also.
Oh, it's always a possibility.
Yeah, right.
How's it feel to be around your brother again?
It's an amazing thing.
The same man.
He has embodied Andy so much in all the different parts of Andy. And he's put him somehow. He knows him, he understands him.
Later, they sing together.
Have you played a real person before?
That's an odd question. Like a living person?
Yeah.
I don't think I had before that, no.
Oh, well, good to see you.
Good to see you, too,
Daddy. Okay.
He now talks with an older man on set.
You know?
He nods boyishly as they hug.
You are?
I am.
Are you proud?
You are?
I am.
Whoa.
Okay.
He smiles exuberantly, heading off.
Ready, Andy?
Okay.
A caption identifies the older man as Jerry Becker, portraying Andy's father, Stanley.
And the family, they embraced me as Andy, as if I was family, as if I was back.
He hugs a woman.
I think that this movie is a celebration and also healing for everybody.
Yeah. Me too, for you too. Yes. For us.
Carol Kaufman, Andy's sister.
You know, and no one really knew what was real and not real half the time. I didn't know what was real and not real. You just went with Andy and Tony and wherever their whim took you. And the emotions oftentimes were very real.
He and Becker chat again.
You want me not to tell you what I really feel?
Yes.
Oh, so you want, okay.
Yes.
All right, that's what I need to know then. All right, then I won't tell you my concern.
You know, I just want to be supported. I mean, if I want to choose to do something, you should support me. I mean, I don't understand why you're always negative and you don't...
Jerry Becker, who was playing my father at one point, went crazy suddenly in the makeup trailer, started screaming at Andy as his father.
I'm angry because I love you. I'm not angry because I want to try to not give you support. Too late! Too late!
All right, fine.
Okay. Becker marches out angrily, leaving Carrie pouting sadly in his makeup chair. A makeup artist dries her teary eyes as Carrie consoles her.
I'm terrible.
Later, he hugs Andy's brother.
I want you to be good. I want you to be good.
It's just bizarre. It's so bizarre. It's so...
And this is what started happening all over the place, this kind of crazy melodrama happening everywhere.
Footage of the real Kaufman.
Try that again. I am a star, and next time I come here, I want you all to get down on your knees and bow down to me, and if I pass you by... Kiss my feet.
Come on,
you bunch of slimy hicks from Memphis, Tennessee. You hicks, go and plow
them out. Plow the fields in the
forest. Back on set. I'll tell you something. You are not welcome here, okay? You're not welcome here. All right, Lawler? I'm not afraid of you.
He flaps his arms like a chicken as Foreman intervenes.
Wait.
Don't scare me.
You have to work. You have to work now.
He doesn't scare me.
Andy, you are here to work.
He splashes water on them.
Andy!
Is that how you talk from Memphis, Tennessee, Mr. Lawler, huh? That's how you talk?
Andy, you have to give me a chance to make a movie. You have to give me a chance to make a movie.
I don't need to make a movie. I want a shot of him.
Okay.
That's what I want.
DeVito with Foreman.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
Mr. Lawler!
Andy Kaufman, who in his comedy routine in various nightclubs would invite women up from the audience and would then wrestle them. He then began to name himself as the intergender champion. Well, he took it one step too far when he went up against Jerry the King Lawler. Remember that night?
Absolutely. Jerry the King Lawler found out that Andy Kaufman is a comedian and not a professional wrestler.
Ooh, and as Lawler slips out of the way, he nails the Colossus. Lawler's got it. Actual footage of their match. Hart trying to get the big guy loose from the ropes. And look at Lawler go to work on him. Lawler picks Kaufman up off the canvas by his hair. He picks Andy up. He's going to suplex him. He lifts him over his head, slamming him down.
Like, that's all he's known for now. He's fighting me. I'm the reason wrestling even exists now.
Carey talks on set.
I'm the reason for Hulk Hogan.
Paul Giamatti listens in, laughing to himself.
In this movie, you'll have to, at the end, you have to be friends with him.
Well, that sounds really Hollywood.
I know, it sounds Hollywood, but that's, you know, that's what really happened. But,
Well, I don't believe that. I'll do anything you want me to do.
He now mutters around the set.
The relationship with Jerry Lawler. But I think that was a function also of coming from a different world. And he was wonderful. But I really liked him. But, you know, Andy felt that it was necessary for him to stay in the character. So Andy stayed in the character.
So, you know, I don't care what you say, you can take your fancy like wrestling moves. You wanna take a poke at me? Come on. I know all the pressure points.
Yeah, go find a girl to wrestle, okay?
Yeah? All right.
Lawler.
No, I've not said anything to Jim Carrey. I mean, you know, it was my understanding that you don't talk to Jim Carrey. He's either Andy or
right.
Or nothing, you know.
He shakes Lawler's trailer, then throws a folding chair.
You're screwing everything up in there.
I guess I understand what he's doing. And the fact that, like you say, you know, he is wanting to be so in character. He is wanting to be Andy Kaufman.
He's a real goof.
He was also going, hey, where's the edge of this? You know, in real life, Andy and I were actually friends, and we, you know, planned things together.
Lawler, I didn't come here to be insulted. I'll walk right out of here. I'm telling you right now, I'm used to being on big shows nationwide. I'm not used to being on a little rinky-dink local show.
And it didn't work out that way this time.
On set, Carey taunts Lawler, a sign taped to his back.
Can't stand to watch it anymore. Jerry, it's a little surprise. It's right behind you.
A crew member peels the sign off Lawler's back, which reads, Hulk Wannabe. Lawler again.
You know, when we're backstage, when we're in front of just people that are working on the movie, to stick a sign on somebody's back and to throw water on you, you know, and stuff in my girlfriend and that kind of stuff.
Once again, proving Darwin's theory.
Lawler chases him off set, grabbing him from behind as crew members hurry over to separate them.
Anytime I want to, he's cracking, man.
He's a wrestler. He gets caught up in the part, man. And some of it becomes a little bit real, and some doesn't, you know? So if it escalates till somebody gets a broken nose, it escalates till somebody gets a broken nose.
He taunts him again, dancing like a monkey.
I think that Andy had trouble early on, which is very, very hard. Jim had trouble later on, and it kind of threw him for a loop, and he got angry, and he used that to express himself, you know, in many ways. There was a lot of anger in everything he did, but he's afraid that if he gets healthy, he won't have creativity sometimes.
Jim?
Yeah, and I think sometimes he makes a conscious decision not to be completely together.
When I watch the footage of the stuff we took behind the scenes, I often wish that that was part of the movie. You know, that it had been married in the movie, because most people felt that the movie was happening behind the camera.
Foreman directs Andy as he wrestles a girl in his underwear on a bed.
Andy?
So what was the trajectory of this footage from when you shot it? What was the original intent with it, and how did it end up where we are today?
One of the things that I've always really been kind of annoyed by, and I certainly, I don't like things that look like actors are stiff and they're standing in front of cameras and they're performing, and they do these things called electronic press kits. I always allow it, but it's never a comfortable thing for me to have someone lurking around with a camera. It's always bothered me. So when they said they wanted to have an EPK, I said, I got Lynn Margulies here. She's a documentarian. She was Andy Kaufman's girlfriend. She knows Andy really well. You know, Bob Zmuda's here. He's a creative, you know, genius dude who did all of Andy's stuff with him.
Actual footage.
What's your name?
Bob Zmuda.
Bob what?
Bob Zmuda.
Zmuda? Bob what? Zmuda? Bob Zmuda?
I said, they can do the EPK footage. We'll get footage every day. And I was comfortable with them.
On set in his trailer.
I get a call last night from Jimmy, who said that they are maneuvering and they are going to find a way, basically, to sequester the material.
He chats with Bob Zmuda.
Jimmy said they came down hard.
Who's they?
Universal. Universal, Myers. Everybody, they just were like,
well, what's
were
the
like, look, this is our project. I don't care if, you know, Jim Carrey wants to jack off all day long. You know, he can fucking do whatever he wants. It's our movie. It's our set. It's our concept. And you're giving this stuff over.
Universal decided at that time that they didn't want me to allow any of that to surface so that people wouldn't think I was an asshole. And those were the words exactly that came back to me. That we don't want people to think Jim's an asshole.
In his paper bag mask.
Quick impression, Jackie Kennedy.
He gets out of the convertible car, crawling over the trunk.
Christ.
Then stumbles around the studio lot. Now footage of Carrey as a young stand-up.
My name is Jim Carrey, and this is my Saturday Night Live audition.
The day I was auditioning for Saturday Night Live, I got out of my car and I heard a voice say, "Don't jump!" And I looked up at the top of the building and there was an NBC page standing on the logo trying to get the nerve up to jump off and kill himself. And I went, "This is not going to happen. It's not going to happen."
You can do anything but lay over them blue species.
But I worked in factories. I had a ninth grade education. And it's a series of, like, crushing disappointments. And I just go into a different gear. I go into, don't know how it's going to write itself, but it will. You know? I don't know how.
Johnny Carson.
He's also been in Hollywood about 10 months and created quite a bit of excitement. This is his first appearance on American television. Would you welcome Jim Carrey? Jim.
Well, my father said, "That's great. Maybe we can turn it into something." And I said, "No, it is something, actually. It's making it. I've made it. I'm on The Tonight Show."
Won't you party in the county jail?
You're like, "Yeah, all right, okay. Yeah, hope it pans out."
In Living Color, 1993.
Imposter, I'm just a middle class worker from Toronto. In spite of how I sound. Single one platinum bigger than Marley and Jimmy and Yellowman, but I'm not even mulatto.
Just before everything started cooking for me, I think I might have been doing In Living Color already. I was driving down Melrose Boulevard by the Improv. I saw this psychic palm reader sign, and she gave me a reading, and she said, "You're about to do three things, three movies, that will be very, very, very big and very important, and after that, it will be impossible for anyone to knock you down from that place." Shortly after that, I did Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber.
Guys,
captions. In 1994, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber broke box office records worldwide. Carrey had become one of the biggest stars on the planet. Now back on set.
Courtney comes today, you know.
Oh, yeah?
Cool.
Excellent.
Very funny because this is my old neighborhood.
Welcome.
Courtney Love joins the cast, hugging DeVito and Carrey. Later, a mariachi band plays as Carrey dances, eating with the cast and crew at the catering tent. Now as Love joins him, Carrie pulls down his pants while she takes off her house coat, dancing together in their underwear. As the crew cheers, they take a bow. Then Love scurries off. Later they lie in bed, joking around between takes. Afterward, Carrie takes a smoke break, sitting around with Margulies and singer Michael Stipe.
Don't hear that on hard copy.
Stop it.
Just kidding. Okay, you don't have that bad of a past. Sweet Daisy.
We didn't talk that much, but the minute she started playing me, I felt like it was me. She had little mannerisms. Didn't you think so? Little mannerisms.
Oh,
and
great.
Yeah, she's great. I really felt like it was me.
She's really going to kick my ass in the wrestling.
She really
she's
did think she would be
you. She's strong. Taking the laundry in and stuff like that, all that stretching.
Merv Griffin.
Now, you're not going to back out of this thing that you're going to do today. You are actually going to wrestle a woman.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you ever wrestle a man?
Kaufman shrugs.
I'd rather wrestle a woman.
Uh-huh.
The public just did not understand the wrestling and the taunting and the whatever and touching the emotional and sociological buttons.
Now, I'm not saying women are mentally inferior to men, because when it comes to things like cooking and cleaning, washing the potatoes, scrubbing the carrots, raising the babies.
Making the babies, mopping the floors.
A clip from the film.
They have it all over men. I believe that. But when it comes to wrestling... Shut up! Be quiet when the man is talking!
The whole women's movement was exploding at that time. And he went the other way and said they should be in the kitchen and all this stuff. He just was on his own wavelength. And you were either going to join or you weren't. And he seemed to thrive off those who didn't.
Film set.
God, men, women, dogs.
It was like when Jesus said, you know, eat my body and drink my blood. It's a way to, like, weed out the crowd. Those people who don't see anything past the literal.
He's a foreign man.
Love teases him.
They don't bother to look for the absurd truth behind it. He's not interested in them.
Do vodka! Do vodka! Do vodka! Do vodka!
Here's vodka's ass.
We're coming out of Vietnam. We're coming out of Nixon. We're coming out of the Beat Generation. Andy was a big Beat Generation guy.
Clips from Taxi.
I don't think he liked structures that were expected to be.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And I think also I'm glad, you know, I expressed that thing about the thank you very much, thank you very much, thank you very much.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because every comic that gets a catchphrase like that goes crazy with
it. Right. Their signature. Ooh, right.
Ultimately, that kind of stuff chews you up. And it might have chewed him up a little bit.
Drives him crazy.
Yeah.
The very thing that makes him
exactly
famous.
An old news interview.
You're the crowd's man after a while. You know, it's not Jim Carrey who can walk down the street just doing anything he wants to and get away with it because nobody knows you. You know, after a while, hopefully it'll be to the point where I can't walk out in the street. Won't that be fun? Where it'll be impossible to walk anywhere without being recognized.
The younger Carrie smiles thoughtfully.
At some point, when you create yourself to make it, you're going to have to either let that creation go and take a chance on being loved or hated for who you really are, or you're going to have to kill who you really are and fall into your grave grasping onto a character that you never were.
A clip from The Mask with Cameron Diaz as Carrie's character prepares to throw the mask off a bridge.
Sure you're not going to miss this guy? When he's gone, all that's left is me.
She takes it, tossing it over the railing as she wraps her arms around him and kisses him.
Everything speaks to me. It's the weirdest thing. Every movie I've gotten in my life, I could trace any movie. And I could tell you somehow how that was the absolute manifestation of my consciousness at that time. I was Truman. I was in the bubble at that time. Peter Weir knew that. He cast me because of it.
Hello. Come in, Major Burbank.
Now a clip from The Truman Show, as Carrie's character stands at a bathroom sink in his pajamas, drawing a Martian helmet on the mirror with soap while the show producers secretly watch in their control room.
Eternal Sunshine was so much
I was very heartbroken.
A clip from Sunshine.
And she looks at me like she doesn't even know who I am.
Excuse me?
She looks at him like a stranger.
Can I help you find something, sir?
And that was really just about that feeling of, my God, I have to erase this from my mind.
Patrick, baby boy.
And also the feeling that that person had erased you. I felt like I had been erased.
Let me know if you need something, sir.
Another clip.
My name is Joel Barish, and I'm here to erase Clementine Krasinski.
When I met Michel Gondry, he looked at me over lunch, and he said, oh, my God, you're so beautiful. You're so beautiful right now. You're so broken. I love this. Please don't get well. You know, because the movie wasn't shooting for another year. So he asked me not to get well. That's how fucked up this business is.
He smokes on set.
You guys don't smoke. What the hell are you doing?
Smoking, choking.
First with DeVito and Giamatti, then with Muda.
Fucking is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I don't smoke. Yeah. You're dreaming. Is it you in the dream? Is it Andy in the dream or is it Tony in the dream? Everybody. Everybody's in the dream and they're all pulling, you know. I had a wrestling match with Andy and Tony last night. Every actor goes through it when they take on a role for a long time. You've heard the stories, you know.
Muda frowns at Carrie, who suddenly contorts his face, now talking and acting like Tony Clifton.
Now somebody give me a fucking drink. You give me a drink?
No, go away.
What?
Go away.
Wait!
No, what? Tony, go back!
He marches off angrily. Later, he returns and climbs into a trailer wearing the paper bag mask with an open liquor bottle in his hand. He encounters a crew member inside, then heads back out.
Where's my chair?
This is the production trailer.
Huh?
This is the production trailer.
Production trailer?
What are you looking for?
Well, that was the making trailer.
Oh, no.
I'm making all my goddamn trailers look the same.
Later, he lies passed out on a couch in another trailer.
Should I walk in first or should we just carry him?
Let's try to walk in first.
They carry him outside as the empty bottle falls out of his hands, then heave him into a chair in the makeup trailer.
Strap him in!
We gotta get him up into the...
I just wondered, was Tony actually drinking?
I don't know, but he stunk to high heaven. So, yeah. I don't know.
Did he ever stay like Tony all the way home?
Yeah.
Especially Tom.
His driver.
Does he ever get out of bed as well?
Yes.
Now with DeVito.
Which trailer is that, by the way, that we're paying for every day?
That's Jim Carrey.
He's not been to work, though. Jim never comes to work.
He's done very, very little work on this project, and yet he won't get a lot of the glory.
He smokes in partial makeup, later outside his trailer.
Jim can act like me all he wants. He never will be me, no matter how much he tries.
He drinks a Diet Coke as he smokes, still in partial Tony Clifton makeup and dark sunglasses.
I tried that, but I got a bottle of wine with him the other night. Got all freaking negative. Jim was upset, and I told him, that's just fair. That's fair talking.
Fair?
Yeah.
He takes another drag from his cigarette.
Freddy might not be recognized for the almighty powerful creativity force he is.
Every time you open your mouth, you learn something about yourself. Especially when you play characters, because when you improvise, the choices you make are always very revealing of who you are.
He came from alcoholic grandparents.
Because there's really nothing in there but the truth.
He knows fair talk.
Where did this character come from? What is the dirt that the pearl is built around. And the pearl is the personality that you build around yourself as a protection against that thought. If they ever find out that I'm worthless, if they ever find out that I'm not enough, I'll be destroyed.
Hey, Tony, what do you think about that comedian Jim Carrey?
He entertains the extras between takes.
Oh, he's smiling all the time. You can tell it's not real.
Here we go.
All that pain was so valuable. Suffering is so valuable. I was a 7-year-old kid who would, when my father's face was beet red and my grandfather
had cornered him for like 3 hours and told him what a loser he is. When they left, I was Grandpa Jack. God damn it, Percy. You're a loser, Percy. You're a loser, but you're a hell of a guy. You know? And I eventually turned that into the dysfunctional family home show on In Living Color.
A clip of this skit.
Listen, son, I just want you to know that I love you. I think you're a hell of a guy.
Can you tell me about your dad?
He stares off thoughtfully as home video and old photos of his dad are shown.
My father was not only the funniest man in the room, but he was a fantastic saxophone player. And before I was born, he had an orchestra in Toronto. But, you know, in order to be something special, you had to leave Canada and come down to the States and prove yourself in the States. He was a little bit afraid of that transition, and also he had a family to take care of, so he became an accountant. And as time wore on, it wore him down, you know? It wore him down, and he got a little bit bitter, especially when he lost his job when he was 51. That really broke him. Not only was he compromising to raise a family, but when you compromise and you fail, it really hurts. It hurts even more than failing at what you love. So that was an example for me.
And a lot of people don't know this, but when I was about 14 or 15, my father lost his job, and I actually became homeless for quite some time. Of course, I grew up in Canada, so I thought we had just gone camping, you know.
I learned that you can fail at what you don't love, so you might as well do what you love. There's really no choice to be made.
He shakes his head and lowers his eyes, fighting back tears as he thoughtfully rubs his beard.
What you want to be, you know? It's like my old man didn't get to see everything, but he saw it happen, and it's happened for him as much as it did for me, you know? So I get emotional. Everybody gets emotional when they talk about their dad, but he truly was a frigging amazing human being.
Captions: Percy Carey passed away in September 1994, 3 weeks after the release of The Mask. Jim put the $10 million check in his father's pocket where it was buried. Now footage shows a bearded motorcycle gang driving down a palm tree-lined street, then onto the studio lot, with someone riding in the front sidecar in a paper bag mask with a skull cap helmet. They get off their bikes and stroll over to a commissary truck to order food, most of them wearing leather Hell's Angels California jackets. Later, they invade the set.
Hey, Hell's Angels, okay? Don't mess around.
No, we don't mess around.
But feel free to do whatever you want.
Later, Zmuda talks with Carey in the makeup trailer.
I think when this film wraps, you're going to have at least 8 or 9 people in this production that are going to sue this production for mental stress.
And that would be different than a regular production?
Later, he chats with a biker, pointing at Zmuda.
You know, that's Andy Kaufman's right-hand man. You know that, right? That's right. You ever see all the wrestling stuff? He's always the ref. There are two Tony Cliftons, who's Andy.
Bob was a troublemaker right out of the gate. You know, they used to do things like go to the zoo and run through the zoo screaming, "The lion's out, the lion's out," and stuff like that.
Clifton pours water over someone.
And he was really responsible for a lot of the Tony Clifton stuff as much as Andy was. Those two together were in cahoots.
They watched dailies.
That there is great, too, getting a kiss.
This is Andy O'Yu.
That's Andy.
No, that's Bob. This is a test.
Okay, it's Bob.
Is it Bob? Is this?
And so Andy would book Lake Tahoe and never show up there. And it would be Bob Zmuda as Tony Clifton who would show up and cause all this insanity to happen. And the people who hired him think it's Andy Kaufman.
I need this thing like I need a gunshot blast to the face.
Clip from the movie.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
He yells at Giamatti, who plays Muda, pouring water over his head.
A lot of these people don't know that it's Jim.
Giamatti.
And a lot of people thought he was really abusing me before.
So are they
being very, like, sympathetic towards me and stuff. And they're like, what? Is he, like, serious when he's yelling? You're a damn player, right? And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck. What did I do? I don't know what the fuck.
Hey, you just sit down and enjoy that! Okay, ha 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 ha! Real funny! I like to do one more.
One more, okay.
And he was just as much trouble with me, man. I mean, he was just... As soon as he saw how far I was going into the character, he became the old Bob, and it brought him to life, and he was back in business.
Clifton sits in a car talking to security.
Who are you with, Mr. Clifton?
Who am I with?
Yes, sir. Who are you with?
I'm with Lynn.
Jim Carrey got an invitation to the Playboy Mansion. My guys called the mansion and said, look, Jim's not really on the planet right now. He's Andy, he's Tony, and Tony would like to come to the mansion.
I don't know what you're saying, but I need 25 at the front
door. You better check what happened.
Outside the mansion.
Well, you will never see me here again.
I got some asshole at the gate here.
Okay, that's it. Who said that? Which one of you said that?
Hefner appears.
Hugh started playing around with him at the mansion, doing a bit outside and stuff like that, thinking he was doing a bit with Jim Carrey. While I was at In-N-Out Burger, having burgers and chocolate milkshakes.
Clifton mingles with women at the party.
How you doing? Where are you going to be later?
This way. I cannot be just...
Celebrity guests.
That is him. He is fucking amazing. I hate him now. I hate him.
They watch him dance.
2 hours later, after he had worked the whole room, and, you know, Hugh had invited him in and posed with the Playboy girls and all this stuff, I showed up.
Hi. How you doing?
He was standing with Bob Smuda, and he turned and looked at me, and he just went ashen. He went white as a ghost.
Hefner angrily shoves the cameras away.
How do I get out of here?
Jerky footage.
Get that fucking camera off, go.
And they escorted Bob off the property through the back way.
This is fine, I'm being kicked out.
I need to take the camera, please.
I am being kicked out.
Back on set, Carrey chats with Smuda.
He told me I was going to be his writer. And then for about 2.5 years, he wouldn't use anything I wrote because he's now going on Saturday Night Live and he has the whole laundry list of Cow Goes Moo, Mighty Mouse, of all, you know, of all sure. That stuff.
He doesn't have to.
Doesn't have it. So when, as soon as he goes through all that and there's nothing left, because he has no more of the childhood act left, right? He gets on the phone and calls Smuda to come up from San Diego because he's definitely creatively bankrupt. And then I take over coffee. And then the film becomes Smuda.
Later, during a smoke break.
Everybody in this movie, every role in this movie is someone who came in contact with Andy in this special life, and they all want, everybody wants to be the most important person to Andy, or the most important person in that mix, whatever happened, you know, and it's all about identity, and God, this movie has turned out to be so much about that, you know, about all of our identities, what we need.
Now actual footage of Kaufman sitting at a mic.
Okay, Andy, we're recording, and if you'd like to say a few things, we're ready.
Caption, Saturday Night Live Audition, 1975.
And you're on.
He smiles, looking around awkwardly, then leans closer to the mic.
Spring was never waiting for us, girl. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Between the parted pages and were pressed in love's hot fevered iron like a stake.
On the film set, Foreman directs a scene. Carrey walks out on a studio stage in a suit and turtleneck, recreating Kaufman's Saturday Night Live appearance. Between takes, he notices an older man arriving on set.
It is! Oh, jeez. Holy moly.
He promptly steps off stage to hug the man. Caption, Stanley Kaufman, Andy's father.
And I know they know I'm not their son, obviously, but it's been like almost like role-playing therapy, you know, a bit, where, you know, they get to talk to him.
This is great.
that day, Andy heard that his daughter wanted to come down to the theater and speak to him. And so she came down, and she, you know, Andy had had her out of wedlock when he was a teenager, and she was put up for adoption, and she didn't know who her dad was until he was on Taxi. And then someone somehow got to her and told her that that was her dad, who was Lotka on Taxi. And she never got to meet him before he passed away. So that day, she came into Andy's trailer and talked to her father alone for an hour or more, and telling each other that they love each other and exploring the reasons why it happened like it happened, and where he is now.
He smiles fondly.
That's kind of touching, that one. Because, you know, Lynn and I talked about it a lot. Where would Andy be now? And she always believed that he would be in heaven, taking care of the kids, you know, playing games with the kids.
Now fuzzy TV footage of the actual Kaufman staring straight-faced at the camera.
Hi, I'm Andy Kaufman, and last year I was in a wrestling match with a professional wrestler by the name of Jerry Lawler. I would say the match was pretty unfair, being that Jerry Lawler was twice my size, and I really wasn't prepared for what had happened. What happened was he used an illegal hold called the pile driver, where he banged my head into the mat.
Back on set, Carrie takes a smoke break.
Hi, guys.
He waves.
How are you?
Lawler glances over at him sternly, walking on.
Very nice to me.
Later, Carrie waits to film the wrestling scene in a simple terry cloth house coat, taunting Lawler in his glittery gladiator-like wrestling costume.
I think it's Dracula. Tell the skull he wants his shit back.
At that point, it was not me, you know? It was not me. I was not making choices based on what Jim does. I was making choices based on what Andy does, and Andy does the choice that makes you want to leap over the barrier and throttle.
He now taunts the audience from the ring.
I guess I'm thinking about what Andy was really like, and as far as I can remember, it was like he was very well mannered. I mean, he always referred to me as Mr. Lawler, that sort of stuff. Jim Carrey's coming up behind me, doing all this kind of stuff, shoving me.
He surprises Lawler by pushing him over the ropes, clearly hurting him. Later, Foreman directs Carrie before another take.
Until you are lift for the pile driver.
Okay.
After side suplex, he'll gently put it down. Okay?
They now film the wrestling scene, Lawler lifting Carrie upside down over his head, then gently lowers him back down.
He got me upside down, he got Andy upside down, and then he put him down.
They'll note when they see the cut. It's like, stuntman, enter now.
Yeah, no, because they're pretty savvy audiences today.
They are savvy.
They can spot a stuntman.
They came down, they said the insurance companies weren't going to have it, and they were going to shut down production, and they were going to do all these things.
I'm not really okay. I feel like I'm being duped.
Oh, come on.
He chats with Foreman again.
You think I'm kidding? You think it's a video? It's not. I'm going to do it, whether the cameras are rolling or not, whether they're set up for it or not.
And that's when all hell broke loose, when Andy started accusing him of being an establishment player and guy who's afraid of the insurance companies and afraid to do something outrageous and afraid to be an artist.
During a smoke break.
I think, you know, he'll be primed and ready because I know how to ring his buttons. Push him.
They come to Jim Carrey's house for dinner. He was supposed to come to Jim Carrey's. Shut up! Shut up! He was supposed to come to Jim Carrey's.
They refilm the wrestling scene as Carrey taunts the audience, then shoves Lawler, getting him to chase him around the ring. As Carey slides under the ropes, Lawler grabs hold of him while Zmuda and the other actors struggle to peel him apart. As a crowd chaotically gathers round, Carey lies motionless on the ringside mat, being checked by paramedics.
Everybody back.
A paramedic shines a flashlight into his eyes.
And then I was thinking as an actor in my head, how far should I take this? You know, how far would Andy take it?
He is carried off on a clamshell and a neck brace, then loaded into an ambulance.
It's not okay. I'm doing my job.
In hospital, he gets an MRI while they hold a press conference back at the studio.
No one knew. My people didn't know if I was hurt. My managers didn't know if I was hurt. No one knew.
We're very disappointed. Mr. Lawler, who is a professional wrestler, we felt acted unprofessionally.
There's a small swelling of his left sternocleidomastoid muscle.
Now, we had reports that Jim Carrey had somehow egged on Lawler, perhaps had spit in his face.
Well, he did spit in his face as Andy had done years ago in Memphis. So Jim, playing Andy,
TV News,
performed as Andy in what happened years ago.
Carrey was shooting a scene
playing
for
comedian
a
Andy Kaufman. This was a wrestling match with a crowd of extras in the audience.
Jerry turned around, got really angry, ran back and forth.
Another station
ago, attacked Andy Kaufman during a TV talk show.
Jim Carrey is refusing to ever work with Jerry Lawler again.
Just all tumbled into each other and became a piece.
Carrey happily watches.
And it's like on the news, the real news.
For those of us that remember him, it is a little Kaufman-esque, isn't it? It really is. We'll see.
People in one town.
Soon after, he is driven back to the set in a padded neck brace, greeted by a media circus.
You're just doing, I don't know.
Look at this.
Oh my God.
They're up on fences, they're up on balconies in the apartments.
Is there ever a moment in there where Jim sneaks back in and there's like feeling of like responsibility or like guilt or?
Yeah, there's feelings of guilt, feelings of like, did I go too far? Did I? Ooh, boy, that was a lot. I hope I don't get in trouble. Should I tell them? Should I tell people? Should I not tell people? And I probably should never have told people, but I don't know.
Actual footage of Kaufman.
I'm not the same personality as Andy. Andy would never tell you.
On the stretcher.
Lawler looks on.
To be transported to a hospital.
He was about breaking that wall and not stopping when the camera stopped.
So Kaufman laid out on a stretcher, we can only wish.
He wasn't about, there's a section of time here where we act like the character and then it's over. You know, he came in to turn reality on its head.
In the intensive care unit at St. Francis Hospital, he has had a battery
to completely blur the lines.
Are you ready? Jim Carrey!
On the Arsenio Hall Show.
And he really inspired me to do some crazy stuff, too. I mean, I remember going on Arsenio Hall during the riots, you know, and with a bottle of wine in my hand and acting like I'm shit-faced drunk.
Hey, you're not Jay.
And I thought it was really over the top, but people really were concerned. I mean, they were completely concerned. And then I called him a black bastard and took a feeble swing at him and fell on the ground.
You in Burbank.
Black bastard!
We'll take a commercial. We'll be right back.
That's for Reginald Denny!
He lies flopped on the floor.
After that show,
we'll be right back. I apologize.
My manager, I went backstage and he was leaning his head against the wall like this, and he had just this, the blood had drained out of him. And he was like, oh, I don't know, man. You might have done some bad stuff out there, man. You might have blown it, man. You know, it was one of those moments where I went, this is what Andy felt all the time. This is what he faced all the time.
Now an old clip from Late Night with David Letterman.
Tonight, for the first time on network television, they meet face to face. Here are Andy Kaufman and Jerry Lawler.
Kaufman appears in a neck brace. Later, Lawler slaps him out of his chair.
What took place just sort of evolved, and it wasn't that we were in cahoots. It was just sort of a thinking on the same level type thing. It was just something that kind of happened. And afterwards, it turned out good for everybody.
On set, Lawler watches the old clip with some of the crew in his trailer. Later in studio, Carrie and Lawler reunite on the Letterman set.
you have to be prepared for any kind of eventuality in this situation. We're hoping that it goes smoothly.
Hey, Terry.
Hey, how are you?
How are you?
Just fine.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
All right. A lot of shit went down, man.
Yes, it did.
A lot of shit went down.
Yes, it did.
You know, I just wanted to say that today.
Eggs just went down a while ago.
Huh?
Some eggs went down a while ago.
What do you mean?
Somebody threw an egg at me.
On the sidewalk outside, Lawler looks up, a cracked egg at his feet. Later, they prepare for the scene.
The stuntman came in and discussed how he was supposed to miss me, and Andy, me, whoever, leaned over just before it began and said, "Hit me." I mean, really hit me.
What kind of guy are you?
They now film the scene sitting beside Letterman at his host's desk.
Maybe I'll get a lawyer. Take a bigger brand.
Apologize to me right now. Lawler stands up, turning to face him. He slaps Carrie hard as he rolls onto the floor, then slowly gets up, about to stomp off stage as he turns back and shouts at Lawler.
I'm sick of this shit, okay? I'm sick of this fucking shit! Okay? You are full of shit, Lawler. I'm gonna sue you. I'm gonna sue you for everything you've done.
I don't think he was really trying to kill me.
Fuck you!
Yeah, it's just creativity. This stuff doesn't matter. I come out of Mr. Chow's or something like that, or the Ivy. I don't know, Robertson there, which is like the paparazzi, you know, mecca. And one time I came out of there and I decided, okay, I want to stand here. I'm not going to say anything and I'm going to wait. And it suddenly got quiet and I'm just standing in front of
the Ivy
restaurant. And they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Nothing."
On set, Foreman congratulates Carrie after the Letterman scene holding his hand. Then a crew member gives Carrie some ice.
That's a prize.
That was great. That's it. That's perfect.
And you put some of this on for now. We'll get it in a rag. You can hold on.
Now a clip from The Truman Show.
Cue the sun.
On the TV producer's order, the sun rises over the town square in Truman's prefabricated world, suddenly turning night into day.
What time is it?
In the TV control room.
What's going on?
You know that there's rumors circulating that he's dead.
It talks about looking at life as a film, as a movie.
Yeah.
And it's nothing more than that. It's an illusion, and that's you
it.
Know, you should be up here watching it rather
that's
than
it.
Being
on set, Carrie chats with Smuda, then back to Truman as he pushes through his office's revolving door and wanders into the sunlight.
I've stepped through the door. The door is the realization that this, us, is seaside. It's the dome. This is the dome. This isn't real. You know? This is a story.
Truman looks around in a daze.
There's the avatar you create and the cadence you come up with that is pleasing to people and takes them away from their issues and it makes you popular. And then at some point you have to peel it away. And, you know, it's not who you are.
He has the world's most recognizable face. He can't disappear.
Truman tries to escape on a boat.
At some point, you have to live, you know, your true man. I mean, Truman Show really became a prophecy for me.
They stop him with a fake lightning storm.
It is constantly reaffirming itself as a teaching, almost as a real representation of what I've gone through in my career and what everybody goes through when they create themselves, you know, to be popular or to be successful. And it's not just show business, it's Wall Street, it's anywhere. You go to the office and you put a monkey suit on and you act a certain way and you say a certain thing and you lie through your teeth at times and you do whatever you need to do to look like a winner, you know? And then at some point of your life, you have to go, I don't care what it looks like. You know, I've found the hole in the psych and I'm going through. And I'm gonna face the abyss of not knowing whether that's gonna be okay with everybody or not, you know? And at times, you know, just like the movie, they try to drown you in the middle of that abyss. They go, no, be the other guy. You told us you were this guy. You told us you were Andy. You told us you were Tony Clifton. You know, no one can live with that forever.
A sign outside a theater reads, Andy Kaufman live at the Carnegie Hall. Then Carey arrives as Kaufman. Later, he stands on the stage under spotlights about to play the conga drums. The movie crew films the scene.
I like you a lot, but I don't like you.
Can you talk about what it felt like in the Carnegie Hall performance? Like
that was haunting. Yeah, I felt that was haunting. To just go and recreate that. You know, where he just made one thing after another, and he didn't stop until they were completely blown away, and they had the most incredible night of their lives. They knew they were part of something special.
Actual footage of Kaufman's performance is offset with Carey's recreation, joined by a symphony on stage.
It's the Mormon Tabernacle Fire!
Now, showgirls dance on stage, doing the can-can.
It's the Rockettes! I can't
believe it! Santa flies down on a sled on a ceiling wire. In the filmed version, Courtney Love watches joyously with the rest of the audience as fake snow flutters down.
And at the very same time, he was facing the abyss. For him to take everyone to that place, while at the same time he knows there's something going on that he's got to face that is absolutely terrifying.
On set, Carey films a scene with the other actors sitting around a table.
So do you think Andy could tell us why he got us here?
Suddenly, it transitions to the actual scene in the movie.
I have cancer.
Forget it. Forget it. This is in such poor taste. No, I don't want anything to do with this.
We should make that play. I can push him around in a wheelchair without getting a wheelchair.
Nice. That's funny. But it's not a gag, Bob. I got cancer. I got lung cancer.
Andy, look in my eye and tell me this is true.
I'm sorry.
She hurries off.
I'm sorry.
He runs after her.
Lynn? Come on. Hey.
Now Carey is driven to an off-studio shooting location, dressed partially like Clifton, in his pink tux jacket, wig, and sunglasses. He turns up the stereo. Later in a house, he acts out a scene with Love, playing a weakening Kaufman.
And I think sometimes people that exist so completely in their character and maybe not know how to get out of it, how to take another road, might take the ultimate road, you know, where they have to actually leave the planet, you know, to get out.
Between takes, Carey wanders through the film set, still looking weak and frail.
All we really yearn for is our own absence. After all, you know, we yearn for what happens at death.
He exhales.
Oh. I don't have to worry about that anymore.
In makeup, he sings as he gets his hair washed.
This is Major Tom to ground control.
Later, he gets fitted for a wig, his head now shaved.
I truly feel like if you ask me where I live right now, where the real me is, I would say that there's a quiet, gentle seat in the universe that seems to contain everything, and that's where I am.
Later, he weakly sits in a wheelchair.
I don't want anything. That's the craziest thing, and it's the weirdest thing to say in a place like America, where I have no ambition. I really, truly don't.
His driver wheels him onto the set.
I'm doing fine, Andy.
Where do you think that'll take you?
Nowhere. I don't have to go anywhere. That's fascinating to me now. The disappearing.
He watches the dailies in his wheelchair.
You open my
so many things I never believed I'd ever see.
Because the younger you, starting out and trying to make it, had definitely had,
yeah,
had a different thing. So where did that transition take place?
Somewhere in the middle of absolute confusion, absolute disappointment, absolute the fruition of all of my dreams, standing there with everything anybody else had ever dreamed about having and being unhappy.
He smiles, then glances off with wandering eyes. Now on set, footage of him standing on a seaside balcony, staring out at the sunset with his arms raised to the sky.
Cut. Yes?
Good.
Okay. Still the big camera?
He finishes the take, walking weakly off set as DeVito helps him into his wheelchair.
The crew and the cast and everybody was so in love with Andy at that point that they were truly saddened, you know? And he was...
They all hug.
Reduced to this little glow. In my mind, he was this little glow, this divine spark that was slowly going out.
He now arrives at another location in a helicopter, wheeled to a van, and driven to another set.
Check ignition, and may God's love be with you.
He slowly climbs out of the van and shuffles to the makeup trailer to get his makeup done, looking even frailer now as Giamatti walks up and sweetly pats his back.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare.
He arrives at another set made to look like a third world clinic.
This is Major Tom to ground control. I'm stepping through the door.
They film the scene.
And I'm floating in the most peculiar way. And the stars look very different today. For he...
At night, he is flown home over LA's bright lights.
Do you feel like you'd be in the same place that you're at now in your life if you hadn't played Andy?
Well, no. Butterfly effect, man, you know? Would have been somewhere completely different. The choices make you, you know? I'm not a big believer in free will either, so... You know, I pick up the tea because I'm thirsty. Is that free will, you know? Or am I thirsty? You know, what told me to pick up the tea?
He sips from his mug, putting it back down with a smile. Now in a costume trailer, a makeup artist helps Tony Clifton get into his ruffled tuxedo, making sweat stains under his armpits. Later, he rides in the back of a limo, swigging from a champagne bottle as he arrives at the Comedy Store set.
Andy came back to make his movie, and Andy did what Andy does. And Andy turned it upside down. And it still got made.
As he enters the club, the crew greets him, all of them wearing paper bag masks.
It was a joyful, loving experience for everybody. And the evidence is right there on the last day. Everybody with a bag on their head, and everybody crying, people crying. This horrible person.
Although I never liked him, Andy Kaufman was a brilliant man, and he changed a lot of things, and it opened a lot of doors, a lot of people in their minds, and I'm honored to be part of this. And we should all thank our lucky stars that Andy come to walk this earth.
Later, Clifton shakes everyone's hand, then leaves the club, putting his arm around Zmuda on the outside sidewalk as they pack into the limousine and share a toast.
Do you miss Tony now? Or like,
nope.
After spending time with him?
Nope.
In that period?
Nope.
I don't miss anything.
An REM music video with the caption, The Great Beyond.
I've watched the stars fall silent from your eyes.
I would like to say I feel bad that I wasn't in the REM video. At that time, I just didn't want to be Andy anymore. And they wanted me to be Andy in the video, and I just didn't want to go back. Once I left Andy, and I tried to figure out what the hell I am again, I just didn't want to go back and be Andy anymore.
He arrives on the red carpet at an award ceremony in a tux.
Jim Carrey, man.
He accepts a Golden Globe from Gwyneth Paltrow.
Hello.
Now making handprints on the Walk of Fame.
Do you know where the title of that song came from?
Well, The Great Beyond, to me, I mean, it probably means a bunch of different things to Michael Stipe, but to me, Andy was The Great Beyond.
He signs autographs at another event.
I don't want to stay around.
I didn't know who I was anymore when the movie was over. I didn't know what my politics were. I couldn't remember what I was about.
He is greeted by throngs of cheering fans.
Suddenly, I was so unhappy, and I realized that I was back in my problems. I was back in my heartbreak. And suddenly I thought to myself, you felt so good when you were being Andy.
Filming at Carnegie Hall.
Because you were free from yourself. You were on vacation from Jim Carrey. So you step through the door not knowing what's on the other side. And what's on the other side is everything. You know, everything. There's a feeling of relief from this vehicle that's traveling through space, trying to like grasp onto stuff like fucking countries and religions and I find it all so abstract. Why am I an American? Why am I Canadian? What is that? What does that mean? Somebody put a line down and said, this is that, you know? You know, we're so much more. And we, like, are born into a family. So we're told what our family name is, and then your parents choose a name, and they say, your name will be Joel. It means the awesomeness of Yahweh, you know? And you have to live up to that, dude. And we're counting on you not to make us look bad. And you're going to go to Harvard, and you're going to be a doctor, and you're going to be, and by the way, you're a Catholic, or you're a Jew, or you're, you know, whatever you are. It's like everything is so, are these abstract structures that you're given. And it's supposed to hold you together somehow, you know? And I've just given them up, you know? And I don't need to be held together. I'm fine just floating through space like Andy. You know, just...
He shakes his head and shrugs.
Flying 6,000 miles an hour around the sun, you know, balancing on tectonic plates that are floating on lava, you know, ready for the end times to occur and whatever the hell is going to happen. I'm just great. That's all great. That's all great.
Another clip of Truman leaving his fake world through a dark doorway.
You're on a spiritual journey, period. And we're all going to end up in the same place, if there is such a thing. And maybe there isn't. Maybe it's just this and that's it. There's me in the teacup. That's it. There's us. We're the universe, man. I like that. That's fine. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know what else to say about all this. Yeah. I think I'm tapped out. You know, unless, I wonder if I could do that with other people. I wonder what would happen if I decided to just be Jesus.
He smiles, taking another sip from his mug, then leans over in his chair to remove his mic.
Wow, we got into some crazy shit there, man.
A member of the documentary crew now reaches in from off-screen, clicking a clapperboard. Credits appear alongside footage of Clifton singing live.
Martha Humble and the Game of Life. Yeah, 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 yeah. Andy Kaufman in a wrestling match. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Monopoly 21, checkers and chess. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Fred Blassie and a breakfast mess. Yeah, 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 yeah. Let's play Twister, let's play Risk. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Now on set footage of Kerry talking with Muda in his trailer.
The list. Camera. I don't care if, you know, Jim Carrey wants to jack off all day long. You know, he can fucking do whatever he wants. It's our movie. It's our set. It's our concept. And you're giving this stuff over.
Then, but you would just then say you would not give your release to the use of yourself.
Just say if I mean, unless you're putting me on. Oh, you're so full of shit.
What the hell's going on?
You're sick.
How does it feel? How does it feel? I'll show you. You got
some shoes on the other
foot. How does it feel?
Fuck you,
Music supervision, Randall Poster and Megan Currier.
If you believe they put a man on the moon. If you believe they knocked that up my sleeve. But nothing is cool.
Archival footage from Andy Lives, filmed by Lynn Margulies and produced by Bob Smuda.
Sent me on the way to the bank. My single number one and Shabbat on rank. I'm wanna kick dice D off the label for this in the cops. They said it just ain't right. But when a Caucasian man records a cupping song, they don't have a problem. Must be an oversight. All the Jamaicans think I gave them a bum steer. But everything I know I learned from an auctioneer. The bidding will start at 7-4 this year. Go get 8, do I hear 8-9? Who will give me 10? I got 10 going once, going twice, sold. I can spout gibberish and it'll go gold. I am what I am, and that's all that I am. A skiddy button, get up, dip it up the bow.
I'm rapping your songs with the best of my ability. You need a black man to increase your credibility. When put on the spot, I side with the rosters. Cause Sean ain't down with no imposter.
Imposter, like vanilla ice, the people are sick of me. They put my boom boom down in 4 months. My butt'll be back in Canada working a day job. With a burger crown. Would you like fries with that? A hot apple pie with that?
Oh, what a rhyme like. Oh, what a rhyme long. Oh, what a life find a place in this world. Oh, never be long. I want to be me. Well, I'm gonna try to do it or die.
Distribution Advisory Services, WME, and Cinetic.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I do all my own stunts.
Copyright 2017, Vice Media and Vice Productions. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.